It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
And here we go. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Wes Moss here every Sunday morning, 9 until 10 today. Ryan Ely here with me as well to take your calls, your questions. 404-872-0750. We have a trade truce. We have a truce as of Friday, late afternoon. Trade truce. It's a mini deal, at least some sort of deal. Progress on trade between the U.S. and China. And of course, still, no one is happy. No one's happy at all. It's a terrible deal. Cover the Wall Street Journal today. Cover the Wall Street Journal right now, online. China emerges with win. China gets a win from a trade truce with the U.S. China gets to shelve tariffs against China. U.S. shelves tariffs against China while leaving many demands to be worked out later. And then the truce opens up an opportunity for Beijing to kick down the road the concessions that they don't want to make. Really? Like changing their entire economy to be a democracy? Their entire political system? That's not going to happen. We're just looking for free and open trade. All right, so I'm going to go through what the media is saying about this trade deal, and then I'm going to talk about where we place this trade deal on a scale of, call it, 1 to 10. Barron's. I love Barron's. I read Barron's constantly throughout the week. I try to read the newspaper version of Barron's, but I'm a little lazy about it because I have it shows up at midnight on Friday night on my iPhone. So I have the magazine version online, but I still like the physical paper. Like I like to read the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the physical paper. I like to read Barron's, the physical paper. But Kotico, my 8-month-old puppy, he's not a puppy, he's a massive dog at this point. He goes right for it Saturday morning. And I realized yesterday he ripped my Barron's to shreds, just like 1,000 pieces. It looked like it had snowed in my front yard. Just 1,000 pieces. So Cody just absolutely destroyed Barron's, but thank goodness it's online. But and here's a couple things that Barron's say. Well, first of all, a couple thoughts. We've got the Eswar Prasad from Cornell University. He's a China expert, and he says this announcement of this impending deal hardly resolves any of the major issues underlying sources of trade and economic frictions between the two countries. Okay, Barron says, one of my favorite writers says, optimism around the high-level trade talks might have been misplaced. Not only did the, quote, deal not address the thorniest issues of the heart of the dispute, but the conflict between the world's superpowers widened in many ways. How about the new IMF director? She says that nearly 90% of the world is on track for slower growth, and that the trade conflict inflicts a cumulative loss of $700 billion in 2020. That's the size of the entire economy of Switzerland. Okay. I think we could probably live without that piece of the equation. Not that we don't want Switzerland's economy, but kind of a little bit of an over, maybe a little hyperbole that the slowdown is that massive. And then Ben Levinson, who, again, I love, says, can we admit that we'd hope for more, both on the market and the trade deal? And the other thought here is that the market was kind of melting up on Friday. Throughout the day, market basically opened up 250 points, 300, 350. And at one point throughout the day on Friday, leading up to, remember, the trade talks weren't until almost, I want to say 2:45 on Friday afternoon. So late in the day, market only opened until 4, so not a lot of whole time for market to digest. So we get an announcement. So at call it 2 o'clock, market's up 500 points, and we finish the day up 300 and just call it about 320 points. Well, every article I read this weekend about the market relative to trade is as if the market went down on Friday because we were up 500 and we only finished, and then we finished only up 320. So, I mean, this is the media is just going to make everything sound to be terrible and that we didn't make any progress. Dow was up and then it barely finished up. Well, it barely finished up. It was up 320 points on Friday. if you look at the USA Today, trade war with China, growing fears of recession, feeble global economy. And now what? Impeachment? Yeah, there's going to always be an awful lot to point to in a chaotic world that we live in. It's going to be constant. It's every single day, every single minute, every single hour of the week. There is something bad to point to. That's no question about it. But let's actually talk about what happened on Friday. First of all, we did make some progress, major progress, and exactly what we have been saying all year, really for the last year and a half, what we've been saying right here on Money Matters, exactly what we said would happen, happened. President Trump faces pressure in the election. The economy always takes issue number one, always issue number one in every election in the history of the world, in the United States. Always ends up being issue number one. It doesn't always get all the press, but ultimately, you and I both know, for the most part, Americans vote with their wallets. So yes, we knew a trade deal was coming as soon as the economics team in the White House started to take over and say, wait a minute, we've got some states that you need, Mr. President. We've got to have this economy on better footing. We've got to get manufacturing working. We have to make sure that farmers are happy. And they are very happy going into this weekend. So a deal is a deal is a deal, and it's better than no deal at all. Here's what actually did happen on the trade deal. So new tariffs postponed. So U.S. agrees to suspend. We were going to increase tariffs another 5% coming up really this, I want to say on Tuesday, and we decided not to do that. So we a truce on raising tariffs. Let's keep them as they are for today. Now, we also get more transparency on financial services. Right now, it's very difficult for a U.S. financial services company, think about a bank or an investment company, to really do business in China. That supposedly, and again, remember, this deal isn't inked. It's agreed upon, but the details have to be flushed out. And we've been through this before, and we know that we had a deal-ish, and then the deal never came to fruition. But remember, the language between this and what's happened over the last year and a half, it's very, very different. What we had seen earlier in the year that didn't come to fruition was, hey, we are very close to a deal. We have a deal, quote, in principle. Today, what we're talking about here on this Sunday morning is that Friday, the announcement was, hey, we do have a deal. We have some sort of progress. Call it phase one. President Trump says there's going to be a phase two or a phase three, but maybe everything else gets done in phase two. So we get more transparency on financial services. Mnuchin's happy about that. And we may even, and this is a pretty big deal, we may even be able to, and we haven't announced this yet, but working towards not labeling or delabeling China as a currency manipulator. Remember, for the most part, China can just devalue their currency. They make their goods cheaper, which can almost offset the impact of the tariff. So we raise tariffs by 20 or 30%. China takes the yuan and reduces the value of it, makes their goods cheaper, and it almost cannot offset. So they've got this function in the trade war that is, to some extent, an unfair economic advantage for them to just manipulate their currency and go on blue light special. As soon as things get more expensive, they just make everything less expensive because of the currency. So that was part of the discussions, and that looks as though it's headed in the right direction. Again, this may not be a big deal to China. We've got over a billion people, billions of dollars for China. Not that big of a deal when they and particularly with agriculture, they need our agriculture. They need our soybeans. They're going to buy an extra, or you know, the verbiage was extra. I don't know if it's really extra. The number is going to get to $40 to $50 billion worth of U.S. agricultural products. And that is what is agreed upon from China to buy our products here, our farmers' products here in the United States. Probably my favorite line in the whole press conference was Trump, was that Trump says to farmers, hey, farmers, you guys hit pay dirt and should immediately buy more land and get bigger tractors. And that is probably his best quote of the year. Hey, go out and get more land and get bigger tractors because I don't even know if you guys are going to be able to produce everything that China has already agreed to buy. Get to work. Overtime shifts. Let's pray for rain. We'll pray for rain. Speaking of, we got a little bit of rain here in Georgia today for the first time since I can remember. Since I was a child, it hasn't rained here in Georgia. Now, what about this? Progress on technology transfers. Okay, both sides, progress on the issue of tech transfers. But again, this is where the details still elude us. No real details on technology transfers, but supposedly we have progress on this. We will have some technology transfers in the agreement. That's part of the statement out of the White House, but largely done in phase two. Now, here's the one thing that both sides agree on. So Democrats and Republicans, and I even saw quotes from Democrats that were positive about this, at least phase one of the trade deal, because there's no Huawei relief. So there's no concessions from our end here. Chinese telecom giant Huawei, we are obviously very, very concerned about us shipping our semiconductors to them. And then we're worried about our national security and what they can do or gather information, spy on the United States. Again, right now, no Huawei relief. That's because Huawei is still on the export blacklist. That's since May. And getting them off of that list at this point, not in the agreement. Bottom line here is that this is progress. I would call it major progress, and exactly what we said would happen. The president, as he faces economic pressure heading into the election in 2020, you and I both know that the economy needs to be good if the White House has a chance for re-election. That's just the way it is historically. Doesn't matter who's in office, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. The economy has to be on solid ground. By the way, income growth, we talked about this last week here on Money Matters. We have to see wages growing at over 1.4%. One of the most important economic indicators for re-election hopes. We look back at the last eight presidencies. You need to have, if you want to get re-elected, 1.4% wage growth here in the United States in order to get reelected. Right now, that number is 2.5% to 3% range. So at least for the president at this point, that very important economic number, wages growing in America across the board on average at over 2.5% or over 1.4%, and we're well above that at this point. Bottom line, progress, a deal is a deal, and better than no deal at all. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, as we continue to write about this and keep you up to date on the economy, what's happening here in the United States and around the world, and markets, of course, every Sunday morning. But if you miss some of the show, you can always find us on the podcast. Go to Wes Moss Money Matters, really on any medium, iTunes, YouTube, and you can find this, the podcast, of course, and listen to past shows. You can find me at Wes Moss Money Matters, WESMOSS.com. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. We have talked about consumer sentiment. Obviously, it's a huge driver of this economy and elections. Consumer sentiment numbers have been solid as a whole. During Obama, the years, the index was in the high 80s to the mid 90s. It shot up in 2017 right after the election, and it has stayed in the 90 to 100 range, with the last reading around 92. It's right in that 90 to 100 range. And that's everyone as a whole. That's the consumer sentiment of Americans in general. But if you break it down, this is the most fascinating chart that I reviewed or saw this week. If you break it out, though, by political party, what does it look like? So what does consumer sentiment look like of the line that looks as though, of all Americans, break it out between Republicans, independents, and Democrats? Republicans have been hugely optimistic. So even though the number, the baseline number has been in the 90 to 100 range, Republicans as a group have been in the 120 range, right around 120, 120, all the way since the election. And Democrats have been in the 70 range. And then in the middle there, independents, interestingly, split the difference right in the mid 90s. Essentially, the massive optimism of the Republicans has been offset by the pessimism of the Democrats. And then independents have served as actually a really reliable barometer of where consumer sentiment is in America. All the while, the economy, yes, it's been good, not bad like Democrats feel, and not a rocket ship really like Republicans say they feel, but a solid or good economy which is right where the independents suggest the economy has been all along. So the political shades that you wear, we all wear, obviously they color how we feel about the economy. And honestly, I can't blame anybody for that. It's just that the way we perceive how politics shapes the economy around us is obviously very much influenced by our political leanings. So over the long run, when it comes to investing, try to think like an independent when it comes to your investment decision. Now, I'm not saying independents are better investors, but I have seen many cases when Democrats have jumped ship and missed out on great years, great markets under Trump, and then Republicans missing out under great years under Obama. Let politics be politics and let investing be investing. I think we're all better if we take off the political shades to be better investors. Hey, stay tuned. More Money Matters here with me, Wes Moss, Ryan Neely, straight ahead.
WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. I'm going to give out the number just because we're going to talk about growth and value, but Ryan said, wait, what about phone calls, Wes? Well, we only have an hour today, but I'd love to do a couple calls, or at least one or two, maybe three. We've got about a half an hour here, so give us a call here in the city. We're live here, Sunday morning, first overcast day, maybe a little sprinkles that I've seen in a long time here, as it's truly fall, now that we're in mid-October. So give us a call here in the studio with questions about, just we'll give you some direction. If you're thinking about a financial decision, maybe you've got cash and don't know what to do with it. Hey, the market's high, Wes, and bond yields are low. What do I do? I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place, or I have a pension that my company's offering me, and they want me to take this monthly amount, or maybe they want me to take a lump sum. What's the better deal for me and my family? Should I take the joint survivor option, the no survivor option? What's the best way to maximize the payment? How do I become maybe a value investor or growth investor? What's the difference? By the way, I'm going to talk about that here on a Sunday morning. We'd love to go to the phones and answer your questions, try to point you in maybe a better direction, make sure you're not missing something big when it comes to a financial decision. You're ready to buy something. Hey, I'm ready to invest in a fund or an ETF or an annuity. Let's just get our take on it here on a Sunday morning. We love to do it. So give us a call here. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. If you're driving, maybe your spouse is next to you. Take the number down. 404-872-0750. Or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Both work. 800-WSB-TALK is 800-972-8255. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I want to bring up this debate between growth stocks and value stocks. And don't tune out just yet, because if you maybe have not thought of stocks with this label, I'm going to explain what these labels mean, and it might make a little bit more sense. Because I bring this up for the following reasons. Markets are driven by fear and greed. I'm fearful, so I'm out of stocks, or I'm not investing in something. Or I'm greedy because I feel like I missed out on something, or I don't want to miss out on big returns. That's the pendulum. And we're not necessarily fearful and not necessarily greedy, but we're maybe somewhere in between that pendulum as it swings back and forth over time. And I bring this up for the following reasons. If you missed backing up the truck on FANG, what's FANG? Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google. Growth stocks that have done very well over the last decade. If you felt like, hey, wait a minute, I owned all these conservative stocks. Why didn't I just buy Amazon? As long as you stayed invested, even more conservative investments, conservative equities, conservative stocks, they've still done very well. They've done very, very well. And just because growth stocks in general, again, we're going to compare these to value stocks. These are the two type main categories. Just because growth stocks have done really well or even better than value stocks in the past decade, it doesn't mean that growth stocks will continue to outpace more conservative equities or value stocks. And let's explain what the two are. Think of a, I'm going to explain a growth stock and a value stock. Two different styles of investing, both within the stock market. And really the market is almost, you can take half of the S&P 500 and carve out the growth side and half of the S&P 500 and carve out the value side. There's certainly some crossover in the middle. Or you could take the Russell 1000 and carve out the most growth-oriented companies, the most value-oriented companies. And the, yes, there's a little bit of crossover. But here's the difference between the two. So a growth company, these are companies that are growing faster. When I say growing, the revenue is growing faster, their earnings are growing faster than most. In some cases, it's really their revenue is growing faster than most. If the average, let's say, growth of a company, all of those companies in the Russell 1000 or the S&P 500, let's say the average growth of earnings is 5%. Think of a growth company growing at 10, 12, 20%. So these are companies that are typically taking all of their profits, everything they make, and they're reinvesting those profits to continue more and more growth. So land grab, more land, more market share. We don't really need to make a profit. We just need to grow. Those companies are also less likely to pay a dividend. They're less likely to pay a dividend. They don't have high dividend percentages. In lieu of, investors say, okay, well, I'm not going to get a dividend. What am I getting? In lieu of expansion. In lieu of growing faster. Investors typically pay, by the way, higher multiples for those earnings. What's a multiple? It's basically the price divided by the earnings. If the average stock trades at 15 times earnings, a growth company may trade at 25 times earnings. So there's a differentiation on the multiple or how much people will pay for those earnings. That's a growth company. Now, what's the kind of the opposite end of the continuum of what's a value stock or a value company? These are companies that are trading typically below what they may ultimately be worth, first of all, on a variety of financial metrics. So they're kind of, they're not getting due what really the business, or maybe the investors are not fully seeing these companies in their full potential. They typically have a lower PE multiple. So investors say, look, I'm not going to pay 20 times earnings. I might pay 10 times, but not 20. And they have very low price to book ratios. What's that? Well, think of price to book, or the book value of a company reflects just the total value of a company's assets. If let's say shareholders just said, look, sell the whole thing, liquidate everything. That's the, whatever those assets are worth minus the liabilities. That's completely liquidated. That's the book value. These are also companies, these are value companies, also more mature. And maybe they've already taken most of the market share they can take, already saturated the market. So maybe they don't have room for robust growth, but they have plenty of cash flow. So for growth, think of companies like Microsoft and Amazon and Facebook and Google and Visa and MasterCard. Now, these companies are still really growing. They've already maybe dominated the United States, but there's still plenty of room to go. And then they can do tons of business internationally around the world. Visa, MasterCard. What's the dividend for Visa and MasterCard? Right around 0.5%. So think of 0.5%. That's the dividend. Facebook, Google, Amazon, they pay zero in dividends. Zero. You get no cash flow. For value, though, think of the big banks, the big energy companies, big mature staple or pharmaceutical type companies, telecom. So a couple examples of more value-oriented companies, J.P. Morgan, Exxon, Johnson & Johnson, a value-oriented company, Procter Gamble, AT&T, Verizon, Southern Company. And maybe Southern Company, the utilities are all definitely in the value-oriented space. I think of a Southern Company that has market share over the entire Southeast on where we get our power in our homes. How are they? They're not saying, hey, let's pop up a hydro dam and let's generate some power in Oregon, and we're going to maybe get new clients. We're going to go that way. It doesn't work that way. Southern Company's already in the Southeast, so they can't really grow beyond what the population growth is. They can raise their prices a little bit, but they have to get more and more efficient, but they're still earning money. So that's a very mature company that already has most of the market share it's going to get. So think of that as we own that, not for its rapid expansion. If you were an investor, you would only own that company for, let's say, its stability, the dividend that it might pay. And these are much larger dividends. So JP Morgan, almost 3%. Exxon, almost 5%. J&J is nearly 3%. These are the annual payout or dividends that you would receive if you own these companies. Procter & Gamble's in the 2.25% range. AT&T's almost 5.5% range dividend payout. Verizon, around 4%. Southern Company, just under 4%. So the very different kinds of companies. Now, if you feel like you have been left behind, though, hey, I haven't owned enough of these growth companies, and you've been mostly value for a long time, that's okay. Value's still done well since 2010. Value's averaged 9.1% a year on average. Great stock returns. Growth's been a little better because you've got to look at some of these big growth companies like an Amazon that have done exceedingly well, that's pulled up these averages. You're going to see growth as a big group up 12%. So 12% versus 9.1. However, over time, and let's go back all the way to the 1930s and look at each decade, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. Over time, value has actually won, believe it or not. Over that whole period of time, all the way back to the 30s, values averaged 11.4% per year since the 1930s until today. Growth has averaged about 9.5% since the 1930s. So both styles of investing have done very well. But value has had a significant, really almost 2 full percentage points beyond what growth has done. That's at least over time. Now, the last two decades, and let's go back in history, the last two times we have seen returns that were really low. So the 2000s and the 1970s is when every time we've seen a decade where annual stock market returns are lower than 6% as a whole, value actually trounces growth. Back in the 1970s, the average annual return for markets in general below 6%, value stocks did 12 during that decade versus 4% or 4.1% for growth. In the 2000s, which we remember, very flat decade, growth stocks actually lost 4%. Value stocks are up 2.5% net positive per year on average. I bring this up again because we're always looking around, where could we have invested? Hey, I've done really well, but I could have done even better if I had just been a blank investor. Oh, I could have just done that. Or, hey, wait, I missed out on that deal. Hey, why didn't I just put everything in that? I could have been up even more than I am today. Because in the headlines, we still hear Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google. Hey, why wasn't I just invested in those companies? So if you missed out on that, as long as you were still invested in good, high-quality companies, even stodgier, slower-growing companies, we see by the numbers, value companies are investing. It's still done actually very well in the past decade. Just because, and this is the next part of the equation here, just because the growth area, that sector of the market or companies has been even better than value for the past decade, it doesn't mean that that's going to continue. Doesn't mean that growth will continue to outpace value for the rest of time. So if returns are more muted for stocks over the next decade, now we've had a really good past decade, on average, about 12% a year. A lot of that is recovery from the great financial crisis. Remember, we had a massive, massive bear market in 2007, 8, 9, and then turned higher in March of 2009. It's been ever since then, we've averaged about 12%. But let's say the next decade is a little more muted. That's an environment where historically more mature companies, dividend payers, value companies have actually outpaced their growth brethren significantly in those environments. Bottom line, dividend investors and value seekers, dividend seekers, stay patient. Listen, usually being patient as an investor is usually the right move to begin with. So stick to what you know, stick to what you believe in and what you're comfortable with. Investing's hard enough already, isn't it? Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Again, if you miss the show or some of the show, you can always find us on the podcast. Go to Wes Moss Money Matters on iTunes. If you watch YouTube, and YouTube isn't just for my kids watching video games or other kids playing other video games. It's for Remember, YouTube's owned by Google. It's really the video search version of Google. And we do a ton of videos on YouTube. So the YouTube channel is Wes Moss Money Matters. And I have a couple of videos up there now. Five reasons that you might want to consider retiring now or today. That has, for, at least for us, has gone mini viral. We'll call it viral for us in real life and call it mini viral. But if you go to the YouTube page, the most recent video, Five Reasons to Retire Now or Sooner Today, has gotten a ton of traction because I think it really speaks, I think it makes some sense. So check out YouTube, Wes Moss, Money Matters. More Money Matters here on WSB Radio, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk, straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. It's Sunday morning. It's Sunday. You're probably on the way to church, maybe coming home from church. We've been talking about value, growth, trade, all the things that have been happening just in one short week here in America. The political divide is going to continue. The rhetoric back and forth in Washington is going to continue. It's going to make stocks super volatile. This week was negative for most of the beginning of the week, and then we've kind of plowed out of that and finished the week higher for the first time in many weeks. It's all about trade today. It's all about if we figure out trade. And because we did deal phase one, we really did make some progress here. I haven't found any headlines that like the deal. On a scale of 1 to 10, where's this deal? Well, we give it a 3.5. We give it a 3.5, maybe a 4. That's not a one. It's not a zero. We made some progress, and progress is better than no progress at all. The real problem that we would see would be the ever escalation. The real nightmare scenario is this just ever escalation of both sides saying, forget about it, no deal, no deal. That's just not happening at this point. The White House understands that you've got to have a good economy. You've got to have voters that think, hey, things are going pretty well in the United States in order to turn out and win an election. So we've said for a long time, you would get some sort of economic deal that is progress. And progress is what we are seeing nonetheless. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. You can find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. Stay tuned to the best program on the planet, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.